Welcome to the Trisexuals, a podcast about spreading your legs and opening your mind. Please be advised that you must be over 18 years of age to ride. Remember that the Trisexuals cover adult themes and concepts and oftentimes use salty language.
The fucking fucktards from fucking hell.
For your safety and the safety of others, please keep your hands in your pants at all times. Enjoy the ride.
And just to set the picture in your mind, Lily and I are actually on our bed right now, and she's partially naked, and I am naked, so...
That sounds lovely.
That'll help.
I'm also naked.
Oh, are you? Yes!
Yes! I love this!
Have a sex toy, we'll try it. Have a fetish, we'll try it. We masturbate and copulate to recreate and educate. We are the Trisexuals.
Welcome to the Trisexuals, fellow Sexplorers. I'm Max Chameleon.
I'm Lily Chameleon.
And I'm Kit.
Good news, everyone. The Trisexuals podcast is hosting the 10th episode.
Whoop, whoop, whoop!
Woohoo!
All right, guys. So welcome to the Trisexuals. We got a very special guest with us today. But first, onto a section that we like to call What's Playing. So, Lily, you and I have been playing with a very special toy lately.
Oh my fucking god, yes.
We actually managed to procure a Tremor, which is a licensed toy by the Sibian. It's a very Sibian-like toy, so it's like a saddle that you can straddle, and it has vibration and a rotational aspect to it.
Oh my god, it's... Let me just say...
It's a really fun toy. The other night we actually did this really great scene where I tied Lily up to her pole dancing pole and blindfolded her so she didn't know what was going on. I did a little bit of flogging and whipping, and without her realizing it, I brought out the Tremor and I had her sit down on it and gave her some fun times by playing with the dials and a little bit of forced orgasm scene.
I was pretty much jelly.
Yeah, that was a very good time. So, Kit, what have you been playing with?
So, what I have been doing, one of my favorite things to do a lot of times is to work in some kind of anal play to my regular stuff. And a lot of times, I mean, you run out of hands if you've got, something on the clit, something, in the front, in the back. And so I like regular toys, but one of the things I do to free up my hands a little bit and make it so that, if I have a good hard orgasm, I don't just, push the toy right on out, I use plugs. And so I brought a little assortment of plugs today that's really fun. So I've got some...
Do you mean like butt plugs?
Yes, butt plugs. They're very specifically designed to stay in the body. They have like a larger section that goes internally and then a little narrow neck and then a wide base. So that narrow neck makes it so that you can't pull the toy into the body accidentally or out of the body. So you can wear a plug just around the house or like shopping or whatever. You can wear them through your day, but you can also wear them while you play. And it's nice because they stay in. And of course, having that extra something, to grip around, it's really, really excellent when you come. So what I've got, first thing I've got is something really unique and fun. It's a fantasy themed plug. And a lot of times when beginners start, they're like, ooh, I want a fantasy plug. But a lot of the fantasy plugs are really large. And if you are brand new to play, like, you want something like barely bigger than a couple of fingers to start with. And this particular plug is just about that size, and it has some texture. So this is a tiny squid plug from Lovecrafters, and it's great. It looks like this little cute squid. It's got tentacles. It's got sort of some texture right around the tip. So if you're new to having texture, you're not sure if you'll like it, you're not sure what to do, you can try this little bitty plug out and see what you think of that. So I talk more about that in an upcoming review here on my site. I also have with me from Oxballs the Ergo Plug, which is probably my very favorite go-to everyday kind of plug. So I have plugs that are like dressy, that are like, they're pretty, they're something, you know, you might want to wear for a special whatever. And then there are some, they're just like really, they're really sturdy and you're not going to scratch them. They're not like glass or something. There's something you could just wear every day. And that's what I've got in the Ergo Plug. Like, it is ergonomic, thus its name. So it really stays in well. It fits well. And they make this one in like a super duper squishy soft. It's excellent. It's my very, very favorite plug. So that also, you're going to see the review. And I've got one more. This is one of my very favorite dressy plugs. This is from Hedonic Glass, also on Etsy. And it's got this beautiful hand-blown glass flower that actually like stands up 3D inside the plug. So when you have it in, it is just gorgeous. Like, there's detail. There's like little seeds on the stem. There's like little bubbles. And it's just, it's really beautiful, beautiful work. So that's like when you want something really nice and fancy. So those are the plugs I've been playing with, adding to my regular play.
Wow. Well, you'd certainly plug in some plugs there. So you said you have different plugs for different occasions. What plug would you recommend for a wedding? You know, I want to make sure that I have the appropriate plug in place.
You need
know,
a wedding or
graduation,
one.
A tuxedo plug?
Yeah.
All there right.
You go. Ooh, does yeah. that mean I can have a diamond one in the end?
Well, I would like that very much.
Ooh. You know, well,
is that how I'm going to engage you instead of me kneeling? So you can bend over and I can just.
Oh my God.
Lily Chameleon, will you be my mated lizard for life?
Yes.
See, you need one of those plugs from Crystal Delights that has the gemstone. You can get a clear one that looks like a diamond. Yeah, totally. And I have one with a green stone in the end. They're glass with it. Ooh, they're beautiful.
Oh,
so,
man.
There you go.
And, you know, one of the favorite things like of a newly engaged person is to show off their engagement ring. Things are going to get a little awkward around the dinner table, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we could just do a picture.
Oh my God. Well, moving on from that. So Kit, you release some reviews, it sounds like, and we have released one review that would be Cortez from Twin Tail Creations. The toy was a lot of fun to play with. It's a avian themed toy. It's really good. Twin Tail Creations does some of the most amazing color pours I've ever seen. Mm. So definitely check out that review. Now,
the pictures were amazing to take, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We
actually
went to, oh my God, there's actually a story around this. So we wanted to get photos of the toy of Cortez at the Air and Space Museum here in Denver. So we did this whole thing where we got up early, trying to avoid people being there. It was before the thing was open. The plane, luckily, was outside. And we actually had to come up with this whole side story about what we were taking pictures of in case somebody came across us. And in fact, somebody did. So we didn't actually have the sex toy out yet, but we had an ammo can that it was set on top of. And we were telling this person that we were taking pictures of the ammo can. We were crossing across Colorado. So we had this like whole backstory planned out just in case. And in fact, we do this a lot when we take a lot of our more interesting photos in public. We come up with like a backstory so that it seems plausible, so people aren't like, why are you taking pictures of sex toys out in public? So in this case, it was necessary, but we got away with it without any trouble and got our pictures, and they look really good. So
they do. They look fantastic, you guys. You did a fantastic job.
So for our 10th episode, we have something very special. We have an interview with Cooper S. Beckett. So let's go to that. Joining us today is Cooper S. Beckett. Cooper is the co-founder and host of the podcast Life on the Swing Set, author of swinging polyamory novels, including A Life Less Monogamous. They teach and speak on such subjects as swinging, polyamory, pegging, play parties, and coloring outside the boundaries of sexuality. Cooper is a graphic and web designer, a photographer, and a voiceover artist. Today we are talking with him about their latest novel, Approaching the Swingularity. All right, Cooper, so the first question I have for you, it's a very important trisexuals question. And yes. It is, what is your favorite dessert?
Well, see, you know, it's complicated because I had to go gluten-free a few months ago.
Oh, man.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so that has you know, ruined almost everything, really.
Yeah.
There is an apple pie that's made locally here that's made in a paper bag.
What?
And you bake it in the paper bag. It's really unusual.
Oh.
But the paper bag helps seal the caramelization of everything in, and it is just amazing.
So is this something you'd go, like, pick up at a grocery store, and then you...
Yeah, the nice thing is it went from, you know, we would get it when we were out on very Midwestern field trips like apple picking. You'd pick it up at the farms,
but now
it's available at grocery stores.
I was going to say, the next time we go to Chicago for Fur Fest, we should see if they can, if they have the... paper bag stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely going to go up to the first person I meet in Chicago and be like, hey, can you give me a pie in a bag?
Yeah, I would like a pie in a bag. Yeah, just start with that. See where it goes. So now, without that, you know, one of my other favorite desserts is creme brulee, namely the creme brulee that I get when I'm at Desire Resort in Mexico.
Or do you want to give us a small little intro to your book?
I would love to. My book, Approaching the Swingularity, is 7 days at a swinger resort in Mexico, following 7 different narrators as well as the various people that they are there with as they go through the intensity that is a week at a swinger resort, dealing with their issues on resort and things from home and jealousy and all the standard issues that can come up in intense swingery environments.
This resort in the book is in Mexico. It's at a place called, Aphrodite? So is that based on the place you just mentioned?
It is. It is. It's one of the most important places in the world to me, and I wanted to see if I could capture it in any form that would be remotely as amazing as it is in person.
So Lily and I have not been to that event, but Lily and I have been swingers now for what, like eight years? We're not terribly active, especially since we moved. We just sadly ran out of time to, you know, you always have to find like the new places to go and meet up with people, that sort of thing. But we've not gone to like any of the destination swinging events before. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, now I'm not going to speak for Lily here, but for me, it captured the feel of a swinging event. When we've done weekend getaways before, or even the swinger camping getaways, like the book kind of captured that essence of, like, especially when it starts off with, you know, the one character talking about how anxious he is, that sort of thing. That's very much how I am. The Ryan in the book, I resonated with quite well.
Excellent.
And I have a feeling that you might resonate with Ryan quite well, too.
No.
I'm sure actually probably a lot of people would resonate with that character. But just the feeling of it. It's a hard thing to describe, to put my finger on. But kind of like that nervous excitement. We call it nerve-sighted. When you go to that kind of event and just, you know, seeing some of the same people around, like you're, you know, at dinner or you're over here near the playroom or something like that. And there's kind of this gravity that certain couples or people might have to you, and then you end up running into them later. It's just like the whole thing kind of felt right on to me. So I think you captured that quite well.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's such a almost indescribably intense experience, and it's something that I don't know that I would seek out if I knew how intense it would feel, but paradoxically, it's amazing. So it's The way I've been describing it recently is it's like all the intensity of a swinger party that then doesn't end for a week.
Right, yeah.
Exactly.
We've never been to one that long.
No,
right?
But we have been to a BDSM like a whole week.
That's right.
Yeah.
We were at Camp Crucible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed the book quite a bit. It makes me want to go to this event. So what's the real event called then at the Mexican Resort?
Our event every year, we do a takeover. It's called Swing Set Takes Desire. And the information can be found at ssdesire.com. And we have just under 20 rooms left for our November trip this year.
Ooh.
It's November 4th through 11th. And it's what's really cool about our trip is because it's a takeover, we can mold the resort to be the way we want it.
Sure.
And that has allowed us to do a lot more inclusivity than most of the time. You know, at that resort, there was always this understanding that bi guys could play, but they should do it in their rooms. And we immediately were like, well, no, we're going to do it right here in the center of the resort because fuck you all, that's discrimination.
We're
also been given the first go ahead to have gay couples on our trip, and that's really exciting.
That is awesome. I have to say, you know, Lily and I being involved both in the BDSM and the swinging community, like in swinging, but yeah, I never really liked the way that swinging handled males exploring their sexuality with other males, or you know, the inclusivity. I love how your book, you have a trans character in there, you have a couple triads, you have main characters who are working through poly relationships, and that's something that at least when Lily and I were swinging, we didn't see a lot of in the swinging culture, and it's great that this event is all for that supports that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was definitely, for me, I really resonated with a mix between Jen and Krista. With Jen in the book, it really just resonated with me how I'll be very, very nervous. And then when I get into the swinging event, when I'm there, I'm like all gung-ho. Like, I'll be like, here, share this cock with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lily puts me through a bit of a ringer on this sometimes because, you know, she'll be excited to go to an event. We'll sign up for it. And then, like, the 2 weeks before that, she'll be like, you know, I'm not sure if I really want to go. Like, I don't know. There's this whole thing, like, kind of against it. And then, so, like, you know, I'll take the position of it's okay. We don't have to actually play. We can just go and treat it like a vacation where we can go back to our room.
Right.
And don't have to play with anyone. And then, so, like, I'm fully prepared for, you know, I'm just going to sit and observe and watch. And then as soon as, like, you know, she sees the first couple playing or something like that, she's like, hey, let's jump right in. And, like...
Yeah.
In fact, the first time that we went to a swinging event, so we had talked about it for what? I mean, at least 6 months,
at
I think.
Least.
Just like the possibility of it. And there's a whole story leading up to that. But when we finally worked up the courage to go to our first swinging event, it was a hotel takeover just for a weekend. And the premise at which we allowed ourselves to go there and not feel too concerned about it was, we're just going to observe. Now, this was before we had the podcast and the blog and all that stuff. We were just going for our own, like, you know, Jane Goodall, we're going to observe, you know, folks in their natural habitat and just, like,
yeah,
take
swingers
notes.
In the mist.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, this is a very, you know, interesting thing to observe. Let's just, you know, not participate at all. And gosh, I think we were there, what?
We went to the meet and greet drink special thing.
Oh, that's right.
And that's when we met that couple, and then they invited us up to their room.
Yeah, and that's when we met that couple, and then is really, that's it right there. That's the crux of what can happen at events like this.
Oh, that actually just brings me, like, to my question, because I'm in an open relationship, but I've never done any swinging or been a part of any swinger events. And I'm just curious, Cooper, how you got started in swinging and what you kind of felt like at your first swinging event, kind of what that was like for you.
Well, I got started swinging with my now ex-wife about 8 years ago, actually.
Yeah.
And we're living the standard monogamous suburban life where we don't talk about the things that we want instead of what we have. And we both wanted to fuck other people because we'd had very, very limited experience up to that point. But we weren't telling each other that. And so we got... I personally got an invitation to cheat. pretty much. And I realized that that was a break point for me. And
what do you mean an invitation to cheat?
Like a hall pass? Or
I was a photographer at the time, uh-huh. And one of the women I was photographing basically made it clear that the moment I want to fuck her, I could.
Oh.
Ooh.
And so that led to a lot of soul searching, you know. Yeah. And
like what is actually the thing that is preventing me from partaking in this activity at this moment? Right. Like,
right.
What does that mean? Yeah.
And so I told her that I wanted to have sex with other people and I didn't know what that meant for us and blah, blah, blah. And she told me she wanted that too. And then
what a relief.
Well, no, because then we figured, well, that's not a thing people do, so I guess we're getting divorced.
And we realized,
okay, but we don't want to get divorced, and, you know, there's always this swinging thing, and what's the worst thing that could happen? We get divorced. Mm-hmm. And so we tried it, and, I mean, I always say that it gave us about 4.5 years more of our marriage than we would have had otherwise. And we parted on amicable terms. And it wasn't non-monogamy related. We just both agreed that ultimately we were different people. But it opened this door for both of us and changed us both in fundamental, important ways. And for that, you know, swinging is, it's an amazing thing. And so that right there was the trajectory of my life changed irrevocably.
Oh, yes, mm-hmm. That is something you talk about quite a bit in the book.
Yeah. And actually, I don't know if you know this, but the book is a sequel.
Oh, no,
I did not know that.
As I was sending it out to people, I intentionally did not tell them that it was a sequel because I really wanted to make sure it stood on its own. So it sounds like it does.
Yeah.
The book is a sequel to the introduction of Ryan and Jennifer into the swinging lifestyle by Bruce and Paige. It's a book called The Lifeless Monogamous. So now you can read the entire backstory, which, as you read it, will sound an awful lot like the thing I just said to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds awesome.
Okay. Okay.
That's exciting. I want to touch upon real quick one of the things that you mentioned. So I think a lot of people oftentimes think in terms when they're thinking about swinging or considering it, that is this going to ruin or improve the relationship I'm in? And one of the things that I feel about it is swinging is, it just multiplies, right? So where mm-hmm. the trajectory of your relationship is at the time is going to be amplified in one direction or the other, depending on where you are, right, at that particular mm-hmm. point. So it in of itself, swinging is not going to fix a relationship or break it apart, right? It's not the swinging that does that. It's
you already have a correct
the non-monogamy.
Foundation.
Yeah.
All that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm curious also, Cooper, like how did, you and your wife, back then handle because I feel like when you haven't participated in swinging, there's kind of a stigma around it. And I call it the wife swapping stigma.
Sure.
Right. And I don't know if that's something you experienced, but that was something that I was cognizant of when we started involving mm-hmm. in it. And I don't know what it was, but I didn't like the feel of, hey, you know, let's just go here and swap women or something like that. Like, that didn't feel right to me. To me, like, I was looking for something like, let's all have fun together.
Yeah, sure. For us, it was more like, oh, you go off in that room, you go off in that room. And instead, we prefer playing together with people because it's just more fun. More people, more fun.
Was that stigma something that you considered?
Well, I think it for me, it was very much, I did things in the rigid way, you know. You're excited about something new,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
and you're getting to actually have sex with other people, like whole different people than you had for the last decade.
Yeah,
and I make no bones about it. I did a lot of things in the beginning that I probably wouldn't do now. I said yes to a lot of people that I said yes to mm-hmm. because I felt like I was not in a sexy enough position to say no, even though I wasn't interested.
Sure.
You know, so my my observation, my version of swinging changed dramatically over the years. And mostly it was because I'm bisexual and I saw that the core of swinging was not friendly to that.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. so that was the first thing that really made me start looking for other people. And it wasn't that I left the swing community at all. It was just that I sort of adapted the version of the swing community that I was hanging out with. So I would meet people, and if they weren't friendly to it, I wouldn't associate with them or with their friends. And over time, I built a small community of swingers that I really enjoyed spending time with, and spent a lot of time with not swinging. And that sort of is poly-ish, you know? Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. I talk a lot about that there isn't a big difference between swinging and poly, because a lot of swingers have deep relationships with the people they swing with.
Yep.
And a lot of poly people have casual sex. And there's really this huge overlap in this part in the center that's actually different. So it was an evolution, to be sure. But over time, and after my divorce, you know, I went through a lot of, can I even teach this shit anymore? Because I failed. And, you know, ultimately, some of the best teachers are the people who've gone through the shit. So I hold on to that. But then I found the queer community in Chicago. And instead of swinger parties, I started throwing sex parties. And anyone could get invited to the sex parties. You just had to want to have sex with other people or watch or be around sexy people. You know, they're really... It's the fluid dynamics of non-monogamy can be amazing when you take yourself out of the boxes that we are trained to put ourselves into.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. When we leave monogamy and move to swinging... That's just another box.
Yeah.
So it's poly, just another box.
Something that actually you talked about in the book that resonated with Max and I, because weeks ago we had talked about this, is the difference between jealousy versus envy.
Oh, yeah.
And we had this really, you know, in-depth conversation about jealousy versus envy, because...
It's something we've been struggling with for quite a while, trying to figure out, like, you know, what does this mean when I'm having this...
Sure.
Less than positive feeling.
But it's, I don't want that person to stop it because I want them to have that, but...
Yeah. Right. But you want it too. Yeah. Right. And that's an important realization. I think as soon as we feel uncomfy feelings when our partner's out having fun and we're not, it immediately triggers the way we react to jealousy in the monogamous world, which is, you're doing something wrong, clearly, because otherwise I'd feel okay. And that's not the case. And I always caution people to look at that feeling as a check engine light. You know, it's not, you know, when your check engine light comes on in your car, it could mean the engine is literally about to explode, or it could mean you didn't tighten the gas cap one more click when you got gas.
Exactly.
One of those things is obviously far less catastrophic than the other one, but if you panic every time the check engine light comes on, you're going to have a very anxiety-driven experience in your car.
And it would also be safe to say, though, that more often than not, it's not the catastrophic option. More often than
almost universally, it's not, in fact,
Yeah, it's, and it could be, you know, just something from our own past that
sure.
you don't even know. And, you know, it's just very interesting. And I like that, and I love the fact that I just started therapy a little bit ago to help deal with those feelings of jealousy and envy. And one of the things my therapist would talk about was compersion.
Mm. Oh, and yes. Then,
compersion. I love that word.
And then I saw it in the book. And I'm like, oh, my God, I know what this is.
Yeah, compersion, the opposite of jealousy. It's all about, you know, feeling good when your partner is feeling good. That's the cornerstone of compersion. Whether you're doing something that makes you feel good or not, their happiness makes you happy.
And what could be more natural, right? Like, I get very happy when I see Lily eating pizza that she really loves. Why should it be any different if it's her eating between someone's legs. Like, it's the same thing.
Yeah. And that's something that Max and I, in reading this book, realized that we really miss swinging. Yeah. Since we moved here to Colorado. Like we said, miss
the,
it.
And especially,
there's a great community by you.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. And we've just, you know, we've been really busy with different things, not to mention the podcast and all that stuff. But also, you know, we, like I said, we've been a little bit afraid about it. And that's one of the things that, for me, has been interesting with swinging. And I think this is an interesting point to bring up. I'm actually autistic. So crowds and social interactions are something that are perhaps a little bit more difficult for me than say, the average person. Now, that's something that I have less of a problem with when I go to swinging events. Now, I'm not one of those people that's out to, like, 4 a.m., you know, dance with everyone and interact with everyone. But one of the things for me that makes it easier to deal with and a more enjoyable experience, because Lily and I aren't the sort to go out to bars and parties normally, but at a swinger event, we enjoy it. And I think part of the reason is, to me, my observation is that when you go out to a bar, say, in a city or something like that, everyone's trying to get to the same thing, but they're all kind of lying about it, right? They're not being truthful. Like, this, you know, what they really want to say is, hey, can we have some fun tonight? And instead, everyone's got to dance around the thing and not talk about it. And for me, that becomes very difficult. When we go to a swingers party, somebody will come up to you and they will ask, hey, are you down for fun tonight? Pretty much. Like, people are just very honest and open about it. And I find that so refreshing and just much easier for me to handle. I don't have to, you know, run my processes at high capacity to try to figure out what everyone's actually getting at. They just outright say it. Hey, I'm interested in playing with your husband's cock. Is that cool?
That is perfectly okay. I'm good. Have fun. Enjoy. Can I play with your husband?
Yeah.
It's nice. The open honesty of it. It really is. And obviously, we should caveat that not all swingers are open and open and honest. They're but in general, when you take away a lot of the, oh, well, we don't talk about that, or we don't ask for what we want, or we don't make clear our interests, which is very true about most of life, then it sort of changes the game, and it changes the game in a beautiful way. Because you're given the opportunity not only to have wonderful, great experiences, but you're also given the opportunity to weigh whether or not you actually want something.
Mm-hmm.
And
instead of just getting caught up in the wind of it, right? You just
It just makes me think of all the memories that we've had over the years. So I do remember I saw in your bio about you like Firefly as well.
Oh yeah, I mean, because it's amazing.
He even knits his own Jane hat.
I know, I saw
did,
that.
I did, yeah.
I'm like, oh my God.
Oh, I'm a geek through and through, yeah.
So, have to ask, what is your favorite episode of Firefly?
Out of Gas.
Oh,
that's such a good one.
Yeah, without question. I mean, although, our Mrs. Reynolds is pretty fucking great, and I adore Christina Hendricks, so... You know, it's hard to choose, but Out of Gas is the masterpiece of that series.
It really is. But then again, I love Janestown.
Yeah, Janestown, yeah. Yeah, the hero from Canton. Yeah. Man, they call Jane.
Yeah. Firefly actually has a very special part for Max's and I life, because when we first started dating, he would actually get on Netflix.
This is back when we had to get the discs.
Yeah,
the discs,
way back when. We would get the Netflix discs, and we'd watch the episodes every time I would come to visit.
Yeah, there'd be like three episodes on a disc. So she would come over for the weekend, because we were both in college, and then we'd sit there and binge watch the three episodes. And then, you know, wait for the next week when we were hanging out for the next three episodes. So we kind of like fell in love over the course of all the Firefly episodes.
Aww.
And so when we decide to eventually get married... we both decided the song from Mrs. Reynolds, the violin song.
Yeah. Saffron's Wedding Dance.
That has to be played.
Yeah.
That sounds fantastic.
Kit is actually able to play that song. She figured out how to play it on her violin, and she's just nailed it.
It's amazing. Oh.
Wow.
I was actually a music major in college. I played professionally for a short time with a theater company and whatnot. So I was like, oh, Celtic fiddle, that's my thing. So, yeah, that was fun because they introduced me to Firefly. I actually had not seen or heard of it before that point. So,
yeah.
But I noticed you.
That's awesome.
You made a Harry Potter scarf. You've got Gryffindor scarves.
And
I'm a huge Harry Potter fan.
Though, you know, I made Gryffindor scarves, and then I found out, much to my surprise later, that I am a Hufflepuff. So,
I would
but then I made a Doctor Who scarf, which is sort of like the sum of all knowledge when it comes to geeky scarves.
Yes.
So that's where I went with it instead.
Mm-hmm. Which I have to ask, what do you feel about the new Doctor being a female?
Well, it's amazing, and awesome. It's been so needed forever.
Oh my God,
you know,
I know.
That's the thing, is we should have done this years ago, but
absolutely.
I'm so excited that they're finally doing it. And as much as I will miss Capaldi, because he was a stunning Doctor, mm-hmm. But he, you know, especially the stuff at the end where he's like, is the future going to be all girl? It's like, well, we can only hope so. That's wonderful.
I mean, this brings in a whole new sexual interest for me into Doctor Who.
Okay, yeah, you don't have to just watch me, you know, drooling over, you know, David Tennant.
Hey, I drooled over David Tennant, too.
I think everybody does. Oh. And David Tennant and Captain Jack Harkness is.
Oh, yes.
You know, it might be worth mentioning, I really kind of like what Jack Harkness did for, you know, I don't know. I feel in a way that brought alternate sexuality kind of to a new light for certain people, right?
Like, I agree. Yeah.
It was just so matter of fact and accepted, and like, this is this character and it's okay to be this way. That just, it was really refreshing to see where that wasn't treated as some sort of character flaw, but like, this is just
right.
A person, you know, I mean, an
it's
alien.
It's just
but...
part of his life. Yeah,
exactly.
My fellow explorers, we've come to the part of the podcast where we're going to talk about spoilers. So you should definitely pause here. Check out Cooper S. Beckett's book, Approaching the Swingularity. It's available on paperback, ebook, and soon to be audiobook, which is my favorite way. That'll be early September that comes out. So one thing that I wanted to talk about, and it's not really so much a question, but I just want to talk about the part of the book that I think was probably the most powerful to me. And that is the scene that involves the slut shaming, like,
oh,
directly.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
With the gangbang and all that.
Yeah, we should set up the scene a little bit.
Yeah.
If you want to do that, Lily, you're
sure.
Good at that.
So,
or Cooper, whoever. Honey,
oh, no, I'm happy to have someone else set it up. That's fine.
Yeah. So basically, to give, you know, a little bit of backstory, it's there's this woman, Paige, that, you know, she's going through her own issues of... You know, going through some stuff with this other...
A previous lover.
Lover
who
that she's still in love with, but she knows is toxic. Mm-hmm. And so now she's, you know, still trying to navigate those waters, but also has this amazing fantasy she's had for years of having a gangbang. But at the same time, she, throughout the entire book, she had this other toxic relationships voice in her head that kept saying, slut. And so she felt she was a slut, but she wanted to have this experience.
Right. So it gets set up in the book that she's able to have this experience in a safe way, safe and consensual way. She has a friend of hers actually take care of the policing of the scene, which is a thing that commonly happens in swinging parties, who's allowed to play with her and in what way so that she doesn't have to come out of her headspace while experiencing the gangbang. Now, up into the point that the slut shaming comes in, it was probably one of the hottest scenes, I think,
oh my
in the
God.
Book. I was enjoying it quite thoroughly. And
speaking of which, you know, I look over and he has his e-reader in one hand and he's fapping. I'm like, what?
Yes!
I have no comment.
It was perfect. I'm like,
I'll say that scene and the scene with the pegging.
Yeah.
That did it for me.
Excellent.
it was just so intense with how this other character basically slut-shamed her this whole time.
Well, to give a little bit more context, there's this character, Will, who has been kind of, I want to say, a dirtbag the whole time.
He's the quintessential single male creeper that happens.
Mm-hmm. But he was there with someone.
Well,
yeah, I mean, there with, yeah, quotes all over the place.
He
is my representation of white male privilege.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that, you know, that makes a lot of sense now in retrospect, now that you say that. But, you know, he felt, you know, he probably feels his privilege. He felt that he was owed a position in this gangbang. Will was a person that was specifically asked not to participate in the gangbang by Paige, who was the woman receiving. And he put up a big fuss about it and
basically threw a fucking tantrum.
He threw a fucking tantrum and called Paige a slut, which of course, you know, triggered these prior memories she's had, or prior memories that she's had with Emily. And it was just a very, I don't know, it was a very powerful scene for me. I'm not sure how to describe it, but it's something I think that touches upon a fear. If you're really into playing and having fun with other people, like, I think we all sometimes from outside pressures get this fear that, you know, we're considered sluts or unnatural or doing something that's wrong. And mm-hmm. I think that scene did a very good job of getting to that fear.
Well, the scene is very important to me because throughout the novel I explore the fact that most of us can't focus entirely on sex at one time.
Mm.
Yes. You
know, there's always this thing in our brain that won't leave us alone. And sometimes we can drown it in the wonderful enthusiasm, but sometimes we can't.
Yep,
and so
like that
Paige's
scene with Raymond, where he's, you know, basically doing a little bit of everything, and still it is not enough to get over, you know, the stuff that he's going through personally, and it ends up being a very hollow and shallow experience.
So with Paige, she's had this little thing in her head since her last encounter with this character Emily last year, the accusation that she is somehow more a slut than her ex-girlfriend, than everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so she was already feeling it before any of this happened. It was there, but it didn't get really triggered fully until this asshole walked in and demanded a spot at the table and then started throwing the word slut around. And so it was, you know, I'm really rough on my characters, as I'm sure you've noticed, because I believe in the power of catharsis in fiction, that if you are not seeing people on days that will change their lives, why are we seeing them in the first place? So every moment, every character goes through a major bit of catharsis in this book. But Paige's is that she has to feel like she is actually this person that people think she is, so that she can come out the other side and realize she's not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And to have it happen in the middle of a safe space, not only a safe space, this resort that she loves so much, but a safe space in that she has someone patrolling, looking out for her best interests at this event. She did make the mistake of going in without all her people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, it's everybody is somewhat responsible for their own shit, too, which is important to me in character development. But no one deserves to be treated like that. And so I like watching scenes unravel. I like, you know, when I read, I like scenes that start out intense and awesome, and then just you see the problem start, and then it just gets bigger and bigger. And that's really what I tried to do through this. Is I'm basically doing a sleight of hand. I'm distracting you with this big sexy stuff, only to just have the floor drop out from under you.
And that's exactly how it feels, right? I mean, you're trying to actually elicit that feeling in the reader when you do that, and it did that for me. You know, I've never had a situation that was as powerful as what Paige goes through in that scene. But there have been times, like you said, where, you know, I can't get I don't know, the real world out of my head, right? And, like, it doesn't matter what fun stuff that I'm participating in the moment. Like, the stuff just keeps eating at me and nagging at me until, you know, I have to say, oh, I'm sorry, I have to, you know, go to the bathroom or something like that and excuse myself from it. You know, that, that happens because when you are at these parties, you are at this high intensity of emotion, and that's where you're going to run into some of these things that have been on your mind that you haven't been addressing.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's sometimes it's very difficult to approach those, but, you know, Lily and I were just saying after we read this, you know, we've never gone to a swinging event that we didn't feel way better afterwards. And not just because we got a chance to be with sexy people and do all that stuff. It's that catharsis you speak of. It brings up that stuff. It forces you to confront it.
And I think after any of those swinging events, there's always been what we call the debriefing time, because, as you know, the hours of driving home or the flights or whatever, that's your time to talk to your partner and just
talk about what
talk happened. About the good, the bad, the shitty, the amazing, and just lay it out on the table.
Yeah, definitely.
And so with the whole slut shaming thing, that actually resonated with me because I'd actually, not too long ago, went through something similar where I was, you know, feeling very good about maybe playing with people again. And then somebody had said, you know, you're just being a slut. And it just took me right back going, well, maybe I shouldn't be doing this, even though I really enjoy it.
Yeah. It sucks. It really does.
It sucks that people have that power to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To others.
And so the other part about this is, they wanted to talk about is the foam party.
Ah, yes.
Have you been to a foam party that was really at night with the glow?
Yeah.
Oh my God. See, I want to go to that. I read that and I'm like,
done it during the day.
Yeah, we've
but done I'm it. Like Ryan, I'm not even naturally claustrophobic, but when I was in the foam in the pool, like, I was a little claustrophobic with that.
Yeah, it was, yeah, it's a really intense, weird experience as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, we went to a foam party in Punta Cana, and it's that same, like...
This was a vanilla thing.
Totally vanilla. Mm. But it was still, you know, you'd come up from the water, and it was just engulfing you.
It's everywhere.
Let's see, and then...
I know what I want to talk about relating to the book. I want to talk about how I'm never going to forgive you, Cooper, for killing killing off Deb.
Oh, I know, right?
I got to fuck you on Twitter one day. No, I know, you know, here's the thing about Deborah, is on the first trip I hosted to Desire, there was a woman there who was amazing, in her late 70s, and on the way home she died.
Oh, jeez.
And that it hadn't been my intent to write her, but as I was writing her, I realized it was her. And as soon as I realized it was her, in that first scene where she's talking with Raymond, I knew that was the story. Man. And because I heard specifically from her husband that this was the place. You know, she got to do this thing that she loved one more time. And there are plenty of worse places to die.
Yes.
We're all going to die. She died somewhere she loved. She got to do that one more time when she was told she couldn't.
We all should be so lucky.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so it was hard as hell to do.
I love that character so much. She reminded me of, I'm not going to use any names, but she reminded me of a friend of ours that I would call a swinging mentor, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She's
just a staple.
Yeah, for us, it's, yeah.
Seriously, about the podcasters, how can they release so many episodes while they're supposed to be at a party? When do they even have time?
The idea is they are releasing, like, 10-minute episodes.
Oh, okay.
Okay, because we were reading that going, that's impossible.
Yeah, when I read that they released a podcast, like, the previous night, I'm like, what the heck, man?
Like, yeah, they're basically going home after the day and recording a 10-minute thing and then just putting it right online.
Okay, yeah, it sounds like maybe they're not putting too much care into their podcast.
No, they're not. They're douchebags. Well, he is.
Yeah. Until the redemption at the end, kind of.
Yeah, but still. Every podcaster I talk to asks if it's them. And I tell them it's all of us.
Yeah.
We are all that. Yeah. We are all the obnoxious people who think we're very clever on our podcasts and talk about our podcasts. Yeah. I have been that for 8 years. I'm very aware of the trope of the podcaster.
Ours is the best, though.
Well, it's our baby. That's why.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. I wrote this down. I forgot to mention it. I love all your references to the magic toy bag. You know, I didn't say magic, but, you know.
But because Max and I were those swingers that would bring a tote of toys with us.
Yeah.
To well, you the know,
for
bags.
Me, it was always, I'm a shy person, and I found that having a bag of toys
exactly.
makes people interested in talking to me and exactly. got me laid a lot.
It does, except for we did find that with a whippet, with a
oh,
flogger.
God, this was our first time. So that first time that we went swinging, this is the one we're talking about where we went to observe and then we ended up going up with this couple. After that, it was the case. How old were we at this point? We were in our 20s, right?
Late 20s. No. Early?
So it just turned out that everyone at this particular swinging party was like way older than us. But there happened to be four other people, two couples that were around the same age as us, and we all ended up connecting and having this six-person orgy that was probably still my favorite swinging moment ever. And because it was everyone's first time there, right? We just like, we didn't know what was going on and that sort of thing, but we ended up finding each other and having this amazing time. We're all really good friends to this day. But the funny thing about that is of course, we had brought our bag of tricks. And one of the couples wanted to try out the flogger. Yeah, the flogger. And so girl from couple A wants to use toy on guy from couple B, ends up the first time just whipping the flogger right on the back of his balls, like hardcore,
oh,
like bad. I mean, he consented to, like, you know, her whipping, but she just totally missed and went, like, way too hard. And, like, and I think he was in someone at the time. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah, it was. But the part of your book where you talk about, you know, foursome and then five has to be an orgy.
Oh, yes. This is a debate that we've had so many times with people. We're like,
oh,
four is not an orgy.
It has to be five plus. Yeah.
Five plus.
And it just made, I was reading that part and I just started laughing because.
I just went out loud. I went, yes, someone else gets it.
Because, you know, when we first started swinging, we were having this discussion with our friends about it. And, you know, it always comes up, well, how many people does it take to have an orgy?
Yeah, well, two people's just a couple. Three people's like having a threesome, right? Four. And then four, more often than not, tends to be kind of like people that couple off a little bit.
Exactly.
And five is when you reach that, okay, we're just throwing people in here for extra fun. Like, that's, yeah. You know, it's the uneven aspect of it. It helps to, you know, bring out everyone's fun.
It is. Oh. I love it. And something also I want to touch upon is the fact you know, mentioned about bisexuality a lot. And when Max and I first got into swinging, I had just come out to him about being bi. I had just realized it myself that I actually like women. Mm-hmm. I find them very, very sexy. And, you know, Max has been amazingly supportive. And I think throughout our...
Oh, wait, do you remember the time you're like, Max, And I was, like, really worried, prepared for something bad. Like, I got something I need to tell you. I'm like, oh, God. Oh, no. What is it? And she's like,
we have to have the talk.
I'm attracted to women. And I'm like, awesome. Sweet. Cool. I am, too.
You know, throughout the years, Max, came out, said that he is bicurious and then maybe a little bit more bisexual. Mm-hmm. And
well, it's kind of like how Ryan is in the book, at least in the first part there. He's kind of wants to play with a cock, but he's like, what is an attractive man? Am I attracted
right.
to this man? He's objectively attractive.
He took the logical approach.
Well,
took the can't get the fuck out of his head approach.
Yeah, exactly. You just can't get certain things out of your head. And, you know, I still haven't, quote unquote, resolved, like, where all that is. But I think the important thing is, like, who gives a shit?
Right. You know?
Like, play with this, play with that. All right, cool. I don't need to take on any labels. You know, it's, who cares about that?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. We just want to have fun. And have lots of fun times and bring in toys and, yeah.
And people.
Oh, yes. And
yeah.
Yeah, and I loved how you brought in a little bit of the BDSM factor with, you know, Ryan being the submissive toy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one, too.
That was a fantastic.
That may have been a fapper.
Oh, Max.
I really stack this book with sex because the first book did not have very much sex in it.
The first book probably made
the conscious choice to really have a lot of sex in this one.
The first book, and maybe I'm overreaching here, did the first book mostly deal with your kind of introduction to swinging?
Well, I mean, it's a lot like my introduction, yeah. Right. Most of it is their discussions and trying to figure out what it is they want because their sex life has gone flatline, stale, you know, it's a lot about what it feels like to meet those really exciting people who seem to have everything figured out and you know, how you admire your first swing couple because they seem so in control and so in charge and so knowledgeable because they're the first ones you're asking these questions to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In reality, everyone's gone through something like this.
And then I specifically decided that I was going to torpedo their relationship in the second book. So it's like, okay, you want to see how not perfect they are? Watch this.
You think they got it figured out?
Yeah. And that, it brings up a really good point is you think that people have things figured out. Some couples, you know, are, you know, amazingly like, oh my God, they're just so perfect. They have everything figured out. In reality, they just may not have everything figured out. They still go through trials and tribulations. That's the part about
being
in a relationship.
There's no one that's got it figured out, you know?
No. Everyone goes through these, you know, the issues. And, you know, people have asked me before, well, you swing. How do you get over jealousy? I'm like, honestly, you don't get over it.
No.
It's something
that... change.
It changes. Yeah,
think about it different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know... the fact that if I look over and I see Max going down on a girl, which is his favorite thing to do, I just get this joy, this happiness.
There's your compersion, honey.
I love that word. I really do. I love that word, compersion.
Well, it's especially good when you pronounce it like that. Yeah.
Gotta roll your R's. So in your first book, do you discuss Emily at all with Paige and Bruce or no?
Yes, they very, very briefly mentioned that there was this girl that she was really in love with and went away. I don't go into it deeply at all in the first book, but she's mentioned in there, yeah.
Now, are you thinking about writing a third book, a trilogy?
I am, but not yet. There will be a third book, and at the moment it's called Pollywogs.
I like it.
And it's about Ryan's relationship with Lydia. Ooh. And her coming to visit them and setting off you know, the conflict that comes when your relationship changes again, you know?
See, I told you he was more interested in Lydia than just a play partner.
I told you. Yeah. I realized that too.
He's in love with Lydia.
Yeah.
Oh, without question.
I might be too.
Because... I mean, she's the closest to Manic Pixie Dream Girl I get in the book.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Do you have any questions for us, I guess?
Yeah. So, favorite sex scene?
Oh, I'd have to say...
It's changing by the minute for me. As we keep talking about stuff and I remember stuff, but I think right now I'm going to have to go with when Lydia first gets with Ryan in like
the toy scene.
And he tries out the being dominated for the first time, and
yeah,
that was a good spot for me. But then again, like the part where I'm trying to remember. It was I believe it was in the pool. Like he's getting a blowjob from Jen, and then what's her name?
Oh, Madison.
Over.
Yeah,
Madison comes over, and because that was so Lily, the you know like. Pop the cock out of the mouth, like, here, you want some of this? Like, that is, like, exactly what Lily does. And I love those moments because there's nothing I like more than having a good laugh during sexual fun because that's just the best feeling ever.
The hottest scene would have to be the gangbang for me, pre the slut-shaming, especially the double penetration.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
That, to me, is the hottest. Yeah. Because I haven't experienced that yet. It's one of my fantasies.
Well, you know, I just released a short bit of fiction. I'm experimenting with releasing short fiction on Amazon called Go for Launch. That is Zoe, one of the characters that's one of the side characters in the book.
Oh, the NASA
book.
Girl.
Yeah. She does DP for science.
Oh.
I like love the sounds that. Of this.
Yeah. It's called Go for Launch, the Double Penetration Experiment, and it should be up on Amazon now.
Okay, ooh. I gotta check that
yeah,
one out.
Yeah, I've gotta look at that. Now, for fun, I'd have to say, there's so many good ones. Like, when Jen is in the sex swing and mm-hmm. getting eaten out, and how you explain how she's, like, laying back upside down, I'm like, I could totally see me doing that. I could totally see it.
We haven't actually been swinging since we've had a podcast. Do you realize that? That was all prior to us moving.
Yeah, we did have an experimentation a little bit in the poly-ish, but, mm-hmm. you know, I think I'm definitely more of a swinger in a way.
More of a swinger?
I think so.
They overlap, honey.
I know they do.
Well, you know, like, for me, sometimes I'm more poly, sometimes I'm more swinger, but it's different for every person I meet.
Okay, so we are all sex toy bloggers here, Cooper.
Yes.
So I'm curious what your favorite sex toy is, and an addendum to that, what is your favorite sex toy for pegging, since I know that you are a pegging aficionado.
Okay, well, the my favorite sex toy that I don't use, personally, is the Enjoy 11.
Ooh, that's a good one.
It's beautiful.
You like to
stainless
use
steel.
On others.
I like to wield it. Yeah. So that's pretty excellent. For pegging, I think the Fuse Tango. You know, it's Fuse Tango is an insertable dildo.
Oh, okay.
So
ooh,
it's,
Fuse
it's
Tango. I missed
the
first word.
Yeah, that goes inside the
pegger, like
dildo, and then
yeah.
the dildo going inside the peggy. It is not a strapless strap-on because those are kind of mythological. Really, you should use it with a harness. But it's my consistent favorite, I think.
We'll have to check that one out. We use the Fieldo quite a bit.
This the Fuse Tango actually is it feels like the evolution of the Fieldo, because there are a lot of things about the Fieldo that I don't like design wise. So
sure.
The Fuse Tango really is the next level of that, I think.
We'll have to get that.
I'll have
for
to take a look. And the night and the thing you mentioned about using the harness is with the Fieldo. I actually, because of I'm really big about like. Strengthening my Kegels. Mm-hmm. For me, I can actually hold it in.
Well, I think part of it is also I'm so much taller than Lily. She's able to keep her legs completely together when pegging me, and so that like holds the toy in, and that
sure.
puts her right at the perfect height. So the benefits to having different heights.
Yeah, there's about a foot and a half between us.
Yeah, it's quite a difference. Well, thank you for joining us, Cooper. It was really awesome having
my
you.
Pleasure.
I think that we've talked about a lot of cool things. I really enjoyed your book, and I hope that we get to have you on.
Oh, I'll come back anytime. You just let me know.
So how are some of the ways that our sexplorers can follow you or get some information?
Well, you can find me at coopersbeckett.com, and you can buy all three of my books, which are two novels, Approaching the Swingularity is the new one, A Life Less Monogamous, and my memoir, My Life on the Swing Set, Adventures in Swinging and Polyamory, which detailed 5 years of essays from my podcast and website, Life on the Swing Set. You can find them all at my website, and I am an independent publisher, so I really, really appreciate it when you buy through me, but I would never begrudge anyone for buying from Amazon, because all of it is available on Amazon. And as we mentioned, I just released a short story about double penetration on Amazon called Go for Launch, the Double Penetration Experiment. It's It's pretty hardcore erotica, but it's the same kind of thing we've been talking about. It's people in their heads, and the lead in the story, the point of view is from an aerospace engineer who works at NASA, so I really, really enjoy that aspect of it, because it's dorky, because dorky is fun. And you can find my podcast at lifeontheswingset.com or our podcast network, which is all sorts of sex-positive podcasts at swingset.fm. And if you want to find me on social media, I am all over the place at Cooper S. Beckett. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all the things. I get very political on Twitter, so be aware.
Full warning. All right, well, thank you very much, Cooper. It's
my pleasure.
Well, that was an excellent segment. Thank you, Cooper S. Beckett, for joining us on the Trisexuals podcast. It was very enlightening and fun.
That was so much fun!
It's fantastic to have you.
One thing I forgot to mention during the interview, and it's kind of interesting, is someone in the book, I'm not going to give it away, ends up getting a jellyfish sting. I actually, for those people that know me really well, I actually have a jellyfish scar.
On his penis!
On my penis. So that brought back some memories, and then it raises the question, how do you pee on yourself if it's on your penis? Don't have to get into that. But, you know, I just really, really got along with Cooper S. Beckett. He's very nerdy, sex positive, and that really jives with trisexuals really well.
And the fact that he's so nerdy, that reminded me, a piece in the book that was really awesome was there's actually a nerdy girl in there that wore some goggles, and if you're interested in that, you gotta read the book.
Yeah, she wears the goggles while she's actually going down on another girl.
Oh, yeah, and
there's squirting involved. So the goggles actually served, you know, a sexy purpose, but also a practical purpose.
So true.
Eye protection. All right, well, that just about wraps it up for us today, guys. So thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Remember to rate us on iTunes, tell your friends about the podcast, and be careful when crossing a theorized event cumrising when approaching the Swingularity. It's the point from which you can never escape.
Remember, coming on top of your bath water doesn't constitute a foam party.
And if you're going to be going down in a squirter, don't forget your goggles.
It's good advice.
Thank you, everyone.
Whee!
Thanks, guys.